Hospitalitychain.com, the world's first online hub designed for the hospitality, culinary, and catering industry. From leading food and beverage brands to professional food service equipment, Hospitalitychain.com makes sourcing simple. Search, select, buy direct, and save all in one global marketplace.
Welcome to another episode of the Fell Into Food Podcast. I'm your host, Chef Jeff Fell. My guest today is Duncan Blowers. Duncan is the founder of Invacus, which is the exclusive distributor of Hinkleman vacuum sealers in North America and Greenback pans. What are vacuum sealers? Well, we talk all about what they are and what they can do for your operations, and maybe in ways in which you never thought of. Listen as Duncan explains his journey coming to the States playing sports, but oddly enough ended up in the equipment world. He now has three companies, and I got a sneak peek of the third, the Zagan Group. Like a good accent? Well, Duncan's got plenty of that and more. Bon appetit.
I don't know where this is going to go. So
we don't know where it's going to go.
We could be crying. It could be hugging. It could be, you might have to get the cameras on the move. Who knows?
Yeah, I mean, you never know. But appreciate you coming on today, Mr. Duncan.
Yeah.
But how the roles have reversed. Remember, four years ago
we
were sitting in a little office. And you interviewed me about, well, it was the future of vacuum sealing 4 years ago, right?
It was during
the pandemic?
It was because we were trying to figure out a way to communicate with people without really having any access.
Yeah. 4 years. So we've seen, what have you seen in that 4 years now, given from that interview to now reversing the roles and interviewing you, what have you seen in that 4 year span? Obviously there's new things. The arrows come out. Aura?
Yeah, one of those.
However it's said, is coming out. Yeah. But what else have you seen? What adoptions have you seen in that space, in the vacuum sealing space?
I think just more people open to vacuum sealing. You know, it's very popular in Europe, but it's not so popular here.
You know, why do you think that is?
I think it was explained to me in the way that just the way Europe is set up from... smaller food companies supplying food, you're talking about putting restaurants or food service operations in buildings which are hundreds of years old, right? It's much smaller spaces. Mm. So they don't have refrigeration spaces or kitchen spaces like they do here. So they had to be, you know, flexible, more efficient in the way they did that, right? Yeah. Okay. Not big food companies delivering every day. So small food companies delivering once a week. So they have to make the food go further. And I think because of that, vacuum packaging, particularly in food service, became very popular.
Yeah, that makes sense. I guess it'd probably be good to give a soft background, right? Obviously, if you're listening, watching, you hear the accent. So give us the 30,000 foot of Duncan, and your background.
So originally, I've been in the U.S. now 20 years. And I was talking to Brad here earlier, and he's off the camera. How did I end up in the U.S.? Well, actually... Out of college, I really didn't have a path of what I wanted to do. And at that time, there was a semi-professional rugby league going on here in the U.S. And I ended up, they paid for me to come over here, paid for my accommodation, and I got to travel the U.S. with that. And I ended up basically staying, falling in love with the Chicago area, staying, getting a job, sort of settling down, meeting my wife here. And then I ended up having to go back to the UK and finding a working for a British company. And then the British company ended up, ultimately coming back to the US here. And then I was working, and they did a big engineering company, basically, in a sense. Well, big equipment for coatings, for paint, coatings, beverages, ink. They made equipment for that. And I had come to the US and sort of opened up channels here and help the business grow. And out of the blue, I got a phone call from a recruiter, and it was Hinkleman, the vacuum sealing company. They were looking to open operation or start an operation here. And I was a bit of a crossroads in my career at that time. And I wasn't sure what I wanted to do with the company I was currently with. And I sort of hit the ceiling with that. And then there's this opportunity to basically start again with another European company, so to speak. And I thought, you know what? If I can do what I did for the British company and now for this for the Dutch company, but in a different industry, maybe I'm doing something right. So maybe it's a good just test of who I was as a person and also my skills to see whether I could do it for a different company, a different industry. So I thought, I spoke to my wife about it and we jumped right in. And then after a few years of working with Henkelman, we had COVID, which really hit the food service industry.
So how long was it that you were with Henkelman before COVID hit?
So I started with Henkelman towards the end of 2016. And then COVID hit in 2020. And during that year in 2020 is when I first approached Henkelman and said, look, you know, how about I buy the company, the US entity from you and become a distributor? Henkelman's very good at building vacuum sealers and shipping them all over the world. Very good. A very good partner to work with. Because I felt at that time there was other products that complemented the vacuum sealer that Henkelman didn't, you know, being the manufacturer, not the distributor. Mm-hmm. Didn't want to get involved in. So I thought there was an opportunity there. And so we went back and forth and they were very good about it, you know, and we made a deal. We came to a deal. And so in 2021, we started Invacus, which is now the exclusive importer of the Henkelman product and now the Greenvac products, which is vacuum bags and these multi-purpose pans that you see that. Again, they all complement vacuum sealing. And Invacus was born because in Latin it means under vacuum.
So when you decided to go from the manufacturing company to Henkelman, did you know, I'm sure you did obviously research before just jumping over to a new company and wanting to grow it, but did you know much about vacuum sealing, about what the product was, or was it just, oh yeah, it's vacuum sealing? And again, I guess you didn't come from the food industry, so most people in the food industry know, oh, you hear vacuum sealing, like, oh yeah, I know about those machines and what it is and what it can do. Did you have any clue what, like, truly what you were getting into, or is it just, oh, I'm gonna open channels and sell a bunch of equipment?
I had no idea. Honestly, I had no. I can sit here now. I was the owner of the company, right? I can say that. But I had no idea. You know, Henkelman is a big player in the world in vacuum sealing, and the US was like their final frontier, and you know, so to speak. And so they sort of said to me, it's moving boxes, right? Oh. And I said, yeah. You know, and I thought, okay, great. You know, I can sort of take what I've learned in other industries and sort of apply it here and see how it goes. And you know, it wasn't that simple. It never is anyway, but it really isn't that simple. The go-to-market in the US in the food service industry is very complicated, and there's multiple layers to, you know, manufacturer to end user, and how to and so you've got to play nice in the sandbox with all those partners, mm-hmm. in order to get it to where it needs to be.
Yeah. It just fascinates me to go into it and kind of, we've worked together now for about 4 years and not knowing the full background. It's like, oh, he's some guy in manufacturing and now he sells these machines, and not knowing it's great to know that. And again, people don't understand that not everyone is in this industry from the beginning. They're in a kitchen. They understand what this technology is or the pieces that we use. So it's interesting to see someone from the outside kind of coming on the inside and trying to figure it out. And what's been great is just watching like the knowledge of like what can be done with these machines. Because I believe that Americans don't, it's always been fine dining. Everyone in fine dining has got a vacuum sealer, right? You go to anywhere. When we had one in culinary school, there was a vacuum sealer. We used it for a whole host of things. So we were sous vide-ing. But now we're starting to see it bleed into the other lines of business. What sector or area of the industry are you seeing it now really starting to become predominant in its use?
Schools and colleges, which when I first started in this industry, I had, again, as I said, zero understanding of it, the market. And I would talk to, you know, some stakeholders in the industry or reps who represent our products in various parts of the country. And, you know, the common theme was, it's just vacuum sealing in schools. It's never going to be. The quality of food is just not there. So this is, maybe it's more than 4 years ago that was said to me. So, you know, again, our low-hanging fruit in the US market was the more fine dining restaurants at that time. Having said that, you know, 5 years on, 6 years on, the quality of food in schools has improved, and which is great. And because of that, it's now led to an opportunity to vacuum sealing. And we're now selling more vacuum sealers into schools than pretty much into restaurants. You know, it's getting up there. And it's almost an, now at this point, it's an easier sell.
Well, yeah, when you can save products, if you use it properly, I think the education behind it, I think people in the education space are afraid because a lot of them don't maybe necessarily have a full culinary background, especially in some of these larger school districts. They've either been in kind of food or they know food or operations per se, and then they kind of let their kitchens do things, and then they see a piece of equipment and they go, ah, that's too much. You know, everyone hears the dreaded HACCP and they go, yeah, well, I'm out. HACCP. Get me out. Really give like a quick synopsis of like really what a HACCP really entails. And again, I know you're not a HACCP expert, but obviously selling the machines, you've had some experience working with those that have experience in it, really that it's not that big of a deal, but really what goes into, to I guess, start to finish, right? So letting people know, okay, I want one of these machines. I'd love to reduce my food cost. Okay, but what's next, right? You get a blast chiller or an oven, it's just, okay, you just start cooking, you start chilling. But with a vacuum sealer, there's one extra step. I don't think it's difficult, but what are the kind of those steps from start to finish?
Well, the bad news is, let's get the bad news out of the way, right? So depending on what state you are in the US, you may have to get a HACCP plan, which basically means you have to submit a plan to how you're going to use the vacuum sealer or your recipes to the state, and they give you an approval. Then you'll keep a HACCP log. And as an end user, if you've never come across that and someone says it to you or a health inspector says it to you, it can be quite overwhelming. You think it's just another thing that I have to deal with. And it can be, expensive. It depends on how you look at it. But you do need, a lot of states now do need HACCP plans. And the challenge, so the other bad news is, it can vary from state to state what that looks like.
Are there states that you don't have to have a HACCP plan?
Well, they're not being enforced.
Oh, okay. Right. Okay.
And so a lot of them are not being enforced, and some of them they are. And so it's a little hit and miss. Some health inspectors, they'll look for it, and some don't. There's all sorts of things going on. But the reality, I think, is this, is you pay $2,000 to $3,000 to a food safety consultant to write you a HACCP plan, right, and get it approved. It's something like that. It can be more, but it's going to be, let's just say it's $3,000, right? Mm-hmm. You say that's expensive, right? It is, because you just bought a $5,000 or $6,000 vacuum sealer, maybe more, maybe a little bit less, but, and then we're asking you to spend another $3,000 to get a HACCP plan approved. Okay. So it leaves people thinking, maybe it's just not worth it. But if you take into account your savings over a year, if you're able to buy in bulk prep, freeze things that, safely freeze things without any freezer burn, so you can buy in season and sell. If you take that and take a sort of a basic vacuum packaging program like that, your restaurant or your food service operation could easily save $50,000 to $60,000 in mainly food costs, but also labor cost.
Yeah, labor is a big piece. Yeah. Right? When you can get your production cycles down, chef's note, right? One task, one time. If I don't have to do the same task over and over and over, and I can seal all these up and go to town and just open bags. Had a catering last night. Everything vacuum sealed. Everything vacuum sealed, cooked it all. Then when we had to retherm, it was just the bags went right into, we had a combi, right into the oven. All we had to do was open bags and serve food. It was, the team was a little blown away because they had not used that. And they're like, Jeff, can you show us? And I'm like, absolutely. And then I have my little green vac pan, just the half one. And we did some Korean barbecue. And all of a sudden, we cooked what we needed, and we're like, uh-oh, we're not going to have enough skewers. And one of the other chefs was like, what are we going to do? We don't have time to marinate another batch of beef. And I go, it's okay. I have a green vac pan, and I can marinate in like an hour. And so now we have multiple functions within the ecosystem, which is great. And I think that is where the next evolution in the schools is going, because now it's not, well, I got to throw everything in a bag, which can be a little cumbersome, right? It's like, oh, well, I have all this bulk prep. I'm trying to put it in a bunch of baggies and constantly sealing. Well, now with GreenVac, which came out in Europe first, right?
It was out. Same again. Most of the stuff starts in Europe.
It's Europe. And then it came over just last year, right?
Yeah.
Into the United States, certified NSF. 18 gauge steel, right? I'm getting my facts done on the equipment.
Yeah, 17, 18, depending. Okay. Yeah.
Somewhere around there, because it's under full vacuum. So, I mean, talk about what now, like for school, that's going to be a game changer. I know they're not cheap. However, like we talked about the savings, being able to bulk prep. Talk about what that evolution has been, some of the user feedback, once they actually get it up and running and implemented.
I think the challenge has been, well, one thing I wanted to mention too is a lot of times when people see a vacuum sealer, they'll say, well, we don't sous vide cook. You know, and to me, these days, using vacuum sealing, I think sous vide cooking is such a small part of using a vacuum sealer that I think it's overlooked. As you just said, the big thing is bulk prepping, right? Whether it's a catering event or whether it's just for the whole week or the next 2 weeks within your food service operation, you can get everything prepped and kept fresh until you're ready to use it. And with the labor issues becoming more, you know, it's been a big savings for people. And I think that the green vac, so sort of switching gears to the green vac, the challenge has been, as you rightly say, they're not cheap. There's a good reason for that is because they are 17, 18 gauge stainless steel. And they have to be, because if they weren't, they would, under a vacuum, they'd collapse.
Just implode.
And collapse, right. But what you can do with it from bulk prepping lettuce, right? You can't vacuum package lettuce in bags because it'll just crush it.
Yep.
But you can put it in this pan, and I can vacuum seal that in these pans, and I can leave it for 4 weeks. We could technically leave it for 4 weeks, open it up, and it's still got that crunch to it. It's still like it was just purchased that day. So that's what it does. And so by being able to use that feature, and then chefs seem to like the marinating and tenderizing, as you mentioned earlier, to rapidly be able to marinate or tenderize or brine or pickle something in that short period of time is, and what I've always understood from chefs is, and then maybe their number one thing is always timing. So vacuum sealing, whether it's Henkelman, whether it's green vac, it really helps with timing for a chef and saves so much time and makes the kitchen so much more efficient. And then I will say that in regard to the cost of the green vac, yeah, what we're finding out there and people using it is they're going to begin with, they say, okay, this is new. So I'm not going to buy $20,000 worth of pans right now. What I am going to do is I'm going to buy a handful. I'm going to buy three or four, and I'm going to test them either on a problematic product that we have that we want to start bulk prepping, just one product, or we want to marinate and tenderize something. And I would say that, you know, it was launched last year, so it's still fairly new.
Right.
But all those people that took the leap of faith and said, yeah, we're going to give it a go, they're all coming back and buying more. And they're buying more, and they buy, you know. So we've got customers that are coming back, you know, from things like there's a not too far from us here. There's a company that don't want to be mentioned because they want to keep it secret, but they use the greenback pans to tenderize their pork, right? And they do it in minutes, and they get much better result. We have one out, another restaurateur out on the West Coast who do their chicken in it, marinate their chicken. And they said the feedback from their clients is the best chicken they've ever had. And they've gone from marinating overnight to marinating in 15 to 20 minutes.
Yeah, it is fascinating. I used it last night, and we were marinating the beef. And then between the beef pulling itself and then the actual liquids, the pan started to rise. And they go, what the heck is happening? I go, it's pulling the fibers, right? There's science behind what is actually happening. Go into a little bit of that science in layman's terms for people that could understand what's actually happening. They're like, oh, okay, great. It's marinated. It's tenderizing. What's actually happening to my food when I do that?
So from a protein point of view, as you lower the pressure, remove the air, right? You're taking that out. It's actually expanding the protein. So the fibers of the meat are getting stretched out. And so whatever's sitting on top, a liquid is sitting on top, it's going to find the path of least resistance, and it's going to start to make its way in between those fibers. And so when you release the vacuum, you're basically allowing the air to come back in, the fibers come back together, and that pulls. And so whatever liquid has made its way in is now trapped in that fiber. Now it's part of it. And that can be done effectively, depending on the cut of the meat and the thickness of the meat, it can effectively be done in 5 minutes to 20 minutes. And so now you've got a fully marinated piece of meat. And so you've just got to imagine that in the sense of a food service operation, of what that does for an operation is they're always ready for the unexpected. So even if they run out of something and somebody comes in and says, I want a marinated piece of meat, I'm sorry, it's going to take an extra 15 minutes, but we'll get you that dish.
It's fascinating how quickly it does. And again, it gets granular and scientific. However, in essence, like you said, it's...
Well, we got, I mean, so we, the one thing that we've done is, and we're sitting here in the studio, right? And that was a brainchild of between Brad and myself.
Yeah, put a pin in that. I want to get back to that.
And so we wanted to be able to, as you say, layman terms, what is, you know, be able to produce content that people can relate to and understand. Okay, that makes sense. Right. So that's one of the reasons why we have this. And one of the reasons we, on a weekly basis, we produce so much content.
Yeah, so now you have the IDM and Backus Digital Media Content Kitchen. Great space. That's where we're recording at live here today. How did, so you've got the space, right? Because you're the distributor for Hinkleman. And then what happens to be like, oh, you know what? There's a space. Let's open a studio.
Yeah, I know. And it'll, you know, so we bought one company and then we decided to start another company almost straight away. So what happened was I was already working with Brad and, you know, Brad here. And during COVID, we, you know, lost touch of being able to reach out and touch the end user and educate. And our reps also lost that ability. As we all know, the world went down on lockdown. We had to figure out pretty quickly how we needed to reach and touch our customers and just remind them in a way that we're here and we're here to help. Right. So I teamed up with Brad and said, Brad, we need to do something on a regular basis, little videos about how vacuum packaging can help hospitality and food service operations through this. I mean, this is how, you know, I think you and I have started to work a little mm-hmm. closer because of the school situation and vacuum packaging. We started, vacuum packaging everything in little bags and serving so the kids could eat at their table, eat at their desks. Yep. So all sort of things like that. And what we found was that these short little videos, we had to be sensitive to it, right? We didn't want to be throwing, you know, just constant messages about buy our product. We wanted to make sure that it was helpful and understanding at the same time because of the situation. And then when reflecting on that, we felt like it was really effective and it really worked. It helped. And we did okay out of that. I mean, most operators in the hospitality and anybody that was operating in the food and service industry at that time, it was hurting, unless you're in schools, of course.
Of course.
Yeah.
I can't stress enough, if you're a food service operator, these will save you money. The upfront sticker shock can be overbearing, but being a chef and having one to, I have a mini jumbo, so it comes with me. It's in my car right now. Literally, yeah. It goes with me everywhere. The amount of time, effort, energy, like you said, the advancement. Like if I'm busy, I may not have time the day before, but I can do it a week before, seal it all up and then open it up. And the guests don't know because it's just as fresh. We've removed all that oxygen. So they're just fantastic pieces of equipment. You've brought up reps and the supply chain and how difficult it can be. I want people to know a little bit about kind of what it looks like in the equipment side of things. Everyone, it's a piece of the industry that doesn't get talking about a lot. You hear the words reps, distributor, manufacturer. Walk people through what the relationship kind of is and what roles each of those play.
Well, I have to be careful what I say here because I could get blackballed from the industry, the deep and dark industry. So it is how it looks, and this is my opinion, is you have the manufacturer, whether they are from Europe or whether they're in the US or Asia, wherever they are. You have the manufacturer, and then you typically have manufacturer's reps. So these manufacturer's reps, there's regions around the US. There's like 20-something odd regions. And within these regions, there are, you know, 10, 15, 20 different rep groups. It may be more. I don't know exactly. So they represent typically anywhere from 15 to 30 different brands. And it can be anywhere from front of house stuff, tableware, cutlery, all the way back to some of the equipment that you see in here and all the different brands that represent.
So it's very similar to food brokers, just equipment and equipment. Their equipment reps.
Equipment reps. So you have them and they represent all these brands. And then you have all the dealers. And the dealers are all over the country, everywhere from, you know, anywhere from, you know, the big boys like Trimark and Webster and Wasserstrom, Singer on the East Coast, all the way down to some small, very small independent dealers. And so what happens, and then you have the end users. And then on top of that, you have service agents. And just to put it in perspective, in Europe, as an example, you have manufacturers, you have dealers, you have end users. The dealers buy from the manufacturers. Mm-hmm. They sell to the end users. They also service the equipment.
Okay.
Here in the US, you have manufacturers, and then the educators are really our reps. And I say that, the educators, because for our product line, it's very much an education still, right? And so these manufacturers' reps, they represent 15 to 30 brands. And then their job is to educate the dealers on our products and also the end users. Now, the dealers sell everything, right? So they've got thousands of lines. So there's no way they can keep up with every single thing that's available, especially something which I would say in vacuum sealing is an education. But they're the ones. So we sell it to the dealers, and the dealers then sell it to the end users. Now, if something goes wrong with that machine, you then have to contract a third-party service agent.
Okay.
So you have manufacturers, reps, dealers, end users, and service agents.
Is the service agent ever a part of the manufacturer? Like, don't some companies have their own
dealers
division? Or
I think if you're big enough, they might do. I don't know many manufacturers that have that. They have technical support, right? So we have technical support.
Okay.
But we don't go out to site, you know, for a tabletop machine. You know,
they just find a local equipment repair company that is certified to repair the equipment, and they just contract that out, and then that's who would come out and come and fix your equipment for the warranty terms, right? Because after that, then it really turns into whoever there's always a preferred, you know, repair company, and then there's whoever they want to use.
No, exactly. And so we've done a pretty good job of trying to figure out who they are for us, because not everybody wants to work on vacuum sealers because they don't see them every day. And particularly these pieces of equipment, they don't break down very often. I mean, they're not perfect, but they don't break down very often. So it's that, you know, there's a good and a bad of that. Mm-hmm. The good side is, it doesn't break down. It's going to, as long as you replace the oil twice a year and run the pump cleaning cycle regularly, then you're not really going to have an issue. But we've done a good job of finding those. And then also we support them by doing lots of videos. So it makes it easier if they're going to go to service our equipment that they feel comfortable standing in front of it. There's not a lot to them, so there's not a lot that can go wrong. So troubleshooting them is pretty easy.
Yeah, that makes sense. I think I want to kind of go to what's next in the vacuum sealing space, right? It's been around. It's not quote unquote new technology. However, it's still being updated. It's being modernized. It's being advanced. What's the future of it? What, you know, as the features get more sophisticated, again, the Aero came out last year. Now the Aura, that's got the nice display panel. What is the future, right? You've got red meat functioning. You've got soft air, all these functions. Is there anything new or like exciting that is planned in the space or to take it to another level? Or is it just more consumer based? Like, let's make it just more user friendly.
I would say it's a blend. From a Henkelmann point of view, we have the Aero, which is here, which is designed to be a basic vacuum sealer with added functionality. So using the three most popular programs used in a vacuum sealer, which is a regular vacuum, everyday vacuum, the soft air function, which just allows you to package bone-in or fragile products like strawberries or raspberries, and then the liquid sensor, which you can safely package liquids. So having a unit where you can do that very easily, set that up very easily, is, I think, very important. And I think the Aero, which does that, will be a very popular selling unit for that because it doesn't take much training. And I think that if you talk to a lot of food service operators, that is a challenge, is having someone that can operate a more complicated piece of equipment. So it's taking technology which is available and making it user-friendly. The Aura is what it's trying to do there, what Henkelmann is trying to do there is take a lot of functionality and make it really easy to use. And what I mean by that is you just to give you a sort of a tidbit of information, because it hasn't been officially launched yet, is you'll be able to select, go to proteins, select chicken, and then it'll ask you, what do you want to do with it? Mm. You want to vacuum package it? You want to marinate it?
So it's almost preemptive prompts.
Yeah.
To walk you through, versus I have to know exactly what I need to do. It's kind of preemptively.
So, and then that goes for like strawberries or raspberries or soft cheese. But if I pick up cheese and I bring up soft cheese, it's going to perfectly vacuum package soft cheese. You don't have to tell it, I want you to do this much vacuum and this much soft air. You just do it by product. You can set it up. You can have your own custom programs. But the idea is that an operator's got something in their hand and they go, all right, I've got raspberries. I'm going to go to the fruit, soft fruit, raspberries, select, and then put them in, and it'll perfectly package it for you.
So it's almost the same thing that Rational did, right, with their iPro line, right, that you can just, I want a piece of chicken, I want it this dark, and I want it, roasted or slow cooked or whatever, and then you just let it go and let the machine do the work, and then user, because again, most people in these kitchens now are not sophisticated chefs, and as you say, in education, it's not always the case where you're getting somebody that's well advanced in the food industry. What other segments in our crazy world, right? You mentioned obviously education. Is there any other piece or any other sector? Again, that could be sports and leisure. I'm trying to think of like what else or who's approached you in a way that you're like, I would have never thought that they would want vacuum sealers.
We get all sorts of requests for product. You'd be amazed what needs to be vacuum sealed. We had not too long ago, someone wanted us to vacuum seal a Kevlar plate that then was inserted into a kid's backpack.
Huh.
So obviously with everything going on, with school shootings, it makes their backpack bulletproof. So they wanted to vacuum seal that to keep their Kevlar waterproof. We get a lot of requests for cannabis. Now that's becoming very popular. So we've done some tests, shelf life studies on that, how to best package under, because with some of these units, you can actually remove the air and then flush in a gas. And so with the legalization of cannabis, more and more people are trying to figure out, how can I hold this product fresh for longer? Because after a harvest, they don't want to flood the market with their product and the prices drive down. They want to wait for the prices to be to be higher. And so by holding it fresh, they have the ability to do that.
Interesting.
Yeah.
I never even...
There you go.
Who would have thought?
Yeah.
Vacuum seal some cannabis and keep... I mean, it makes sense, right? You would want it fresh, I would assume, right?
I know. I remember we did the MJ BizCon, which is probably the biggest trade show for cannabis, maybe in the world. In Vegas, and we did it 1 year, and we'd bought some, because at that time Nevada, this is 3 or 4 years ago, maybe even longer, and Nevada was just come legal. So we went to a dispensary, and we thought, we'll buy some, and we will we'll have it on the booth, and we'll package it up, and we had it out there on the booth, and people would walk by and say, is that real? So yeah, I kept asking, is it real? Why do people keep asking if this is real weed? We're at a cannabis show. And anyway, I was walking around the show a little later, and there's someone on an edible booth was giving a demonstration. And one of the people asked, is this cannabis in that? And they said, no, you can't have cannabis here. This is a federal building. It's illegal to have cannabis on a federal building. I was like, oh, shit. So I went back. When we bought quite a lot. But we packaged it all up. And so the funny thing was, and I don't know whether this will get me into trouble, but I was going to give it away, But I realized, hang on a second, I'm on a booth, I got vacuum sealer, I got bags, I got jars, I got a shipping crate going back to Chicago. And this is all around Christmas. So we packaged it all up into these small little jars or in the bag. I put it into a box, buried it into a box, taped it up, put my name on the side of the box and threw it into the shipping crate. And a few days later, back in Chicago, it turns up. Unpacking the crate, there's a box with your name on it. I opened it up, it's all these little jars, put a little ribbon on top of it, went to Christmas parties. It was my little, instead of a bottle of wine, everybody got a little jar of weed. It was a hero that Christmas. Because it was still illegal then in Illinois at that point.
Oh, that's awesome. What are the next plans? And we can cut this out if we need to, but I don't know if you can release it. But what's up and coming for in Bacchus? I know there's something.
I know where you're going.
I know you know where I'm going. But I don't know if it can be released yet, if we can tease it, or if you can just...
No, we can go with it. We can go with
it. Okay. But yeah, so what's...
Third company.
Yeah, third company. What's coming out in the Invacus world for Mr. Duncan?
Well, so we have Invacus and we have Invacus Digital Media. And so what happened... So to give you a quick backstory, we get approached somewhat on a regular basis. Some companies, particularly European companies, will approach us and say, you know, would you be interested in representing or, you know, being our exclusive importer or import our product into the US and distribute it? And a lot of the times we say no. And the reason we say, for various reasons we say no, but typically it's the type of product, it's the product category, if it's a Me Too product, or we feel that the manufacturer is just wants to dump a container on us and let us, you know, do what we can do with it. But recently, I say recently, the last 12 months, we started talking to two different companies, and we hit it off with them. Good, great products, great people, and are determined to grow their brands beyond Europe and into the US. Now, the US food service market is complicated. It's not easy to get in. And I think it's probably one of the more complicated industries to infiltrate than probably other food service industries around the world. And so instead of bringing it into the Invacus brand, we've created a whole new company. And this third company, it's called the Zaden Group. And it's like the brand behind the brand. So it's just, the name Zaden is just a holding name. And so we've started with two brands. The first one is going to be, it's a Portuguese company, and they do, in essence, it's called a rack washer. So these rack washing systems that they use 2/3 of the less water than a regular rack washer or flight machine. The energy consumption is very low. Cycle times are 4 to 6 minutes. It's higher water pressure, higher temperatures. It's insulated. It's got all this technology. I mean, this company has the ability. Salmoneer. The company name is called Salmoneer, and their product is a multi washer. And it just had so much going for it, and there's such a good bunch of people that. Even so, you know, like I was going to say, they have like a mission control at their headquarters in Portugal, where they have people monitoring all their units in the field 24/7.
Wow.
And so they can tell you or tell the end user when a component is going to fail before it fails.
That's insane. I
know. And talking about where technology is going, you know, these are not cheap items. You know, they're $80,000, $100,000 plus units. But what they can do and what they deliver based on what is currently out there, it was too good an opportunity to ignore, and I think it is a product with plenty of opportunity. So that's the one. That's the first one.
Because that unit is essentially, think of vertical dishwashing, correct? Yeah. Like, yeah. I mean, if you had to take like a massive Hobart, Champion, whatever, right? They're massive conveyor belts, kind of turn it vertical.
Yeah.
And then you're able to just roll in basically a whole rack. Correct.
Yeah.
And then it just
rack of whatever you want on there.
Whatever you want. It does all the washing, spits it out. And again, in 4 to 6 minutes, it's really not that.
I mean, hotel pans, a big one, trays. And here's something I didn't even think about. This is because I'm naive to this is, someone mentioned in a presentation, and it's so European. It's like sort of half mentioned in a presentation about drying. It can dry plastic because it spins. The technology, it spins so quickly.
Okay.
So it doesn't need to be blown. And it is more effective than drying products, their technology, the way it spins, than any other washing machine out there. So what that means is when the plastic trays come out, if you're doing a bunch of plastic trays, they are ready to use straight away because they don't have to be wiped down. And when they said that, and someone, there was a consultant sitting in the room, and they said, and it was like buried in a presentation. The consultant says, that should be front and center.
I was just getting ready to say, that is one of the biggest issues that I had as an operator was either you had to pay an arm and a leg for a liquid rinse aid to get the stuff to dry in a decent amount of time to be able to get it right back out, right? Especially in universities, you're using actual plates, silverware, And you either have to have such an inventory that you can keep replacing, or you got to be able to get that stuff out of your dish machine and out to the customer to use again. And drying was an issue. So it's either you spend an arm and a leg on the liquid. I mean, that stuff can be hundreds of dollars for a gallon. Per gallon.
Yeah.
And you go through easily a gallon every few days, depending on your volume, every few days, one a week. Or you're using a brick of the product that mixes with water. Not as effective. Takes longer to dry. And so then you're still waiting. Or like you had said, which was you see people actually wiping down. And what people don't know from a food safety standpoint is unless you're using a single-use paper towel or like paper product to basically clean and sanitize, or basically not clean and sanitize, but dry, you're actually breaking food code because you can't use like a towel because of bacteria built up on it. So you can't take like just your old towel and be like, oh, I'm just going to wipe it. I had people do that all the time. Like, what are you doing? You can't, but we need the dishes dry. I understand that. But you're going to have to let them air dry. You can't use that. You can wipe it one time. You can't use that towel again. And we're not going to sit here and go through a bunch of paper towels. So that's pretty, that should be at the top of the list.
But it's so, I guess, European in the fact that I see these things and I hear these things and then I hear people say, well, that, oh my word, that's amazing. If you could do that, why are we not singing about this? And so the other thing is, I don't think it's not trying to take away business from flight machines or things like that. But what it is mainly, one of the big opportunities is those operations where they're taking a rack and a couple of people out back and they're using a hose and they're hosing down hotel pans and trays. And it still happens.
Wow.
You know, and so that's labor intensive. And so it can replace that. And the other beautiful thing about this company is that, you know, they will run a report. So it's not just, here's the price, this is what it can do for you. Actually, based on your information, this is how long it will take you to pay it back. And so they're very well organized. And so it was very attractive to us. And so that was that. And then the second one is dry aging. And it just sort of, these things fall into our lap and we kept talking and we look at the product category and we look where the product category is going in the US and even in the world. Dry aging is rising and it's rising fast. I think there's, you know, plenty of room and opportunities for companies to grow in this space. And then we're partnering with a company called Meatico. And Meatico, they've got it together. You know, they're a privately held company, you know, over 56 years old. It's, you know, Italian company, and they've really done their homework.
Because they're big in Europe, right?
They're big in Europe. Refrigeration, blast chilling. They do, you know, wine storage, proofing machines. They do a bunch of stuff, but they just want to focus on dry aging and meat aging and fish aging. And they've done some, they've really done their homework, you know. And so there's a lot more good stuff to come out of that. But so that's it, you know. So we're going to start there. And we're going to see where this goes. And is it crazy to start a third company in you know, 2.5 years? Probably, you know.
I'm trying to get one up and running, and it's enough for me, let alone three. I can't, I don't know. It's
stressful. I mean, it's definitely, it's stressful. You know, I tell you this, though, in all honesty, is 6 years ago, this month, I quit drinking, wow. Right? I was a big drinker, just a lot, a way of drinking way too much. People that knew me in the drinking days would probably attest to that. And so I haven't had a drink in 6 years. It'll be 6 years in February 20-something. My wife reminds me of that. So now I have all this time on my hands. I'm not hungover. But I've always had that, I guess, always had that entrepreneurial spirit. And I've always talked about it, right? And I've for many years talked about starting a company and never either had the courage, probably the courage to do it, to take that leap of faith. And then he quit drinking. And then within a couple of years of quitting drinking, you know, everything changes.
Yeah.
And so now we find myself three companies in and I don't know, it's a roller coaster. But sometimes I think to myself, you know, did I make the right, you know, sometimes, a lot of the times I think to myself, did I make the right decision? You know, should I just go work for another company and just be safe? You know, it's safe and still have fun, you know. But ultimately, I would miss this if I did that.
Yeah, I think it's the crazy of the entrepreneurial spirit. I think when someone's got it in their bones, right? You see it, like you just can feel it. Like that's just what they do. And it's almost like you're in a cage sometimes. I feel like you said, it's not that you can't have fun working at a company or doing other things. But when it's kind of your own thing, you get to create. And what I appreciate about you is kind of the vision, right? You're not looking about just now. You're looking at what's coming in the future. What can things be? Pushing the boundaries, right? I will never forget when we did our COVID testing and it was like, let's put trays in these bags. What about this tray? What about that tray? Oh, what about a hot bag? Oh, we should have a little tear tap. All these crazy things, but you were open to every idea. It wasn't, no, that's not what we're trying to do. It was really being the end user. It was, what is going to work? What would make you use it? And how can we help do that? And that's what I really appreciate about how you approach business. Working with you has been great in that aspect. So I want to jump in the weeds here. What's the craziest thing you've ever vacuum sealed? You're around them all the time. What's the craziest thing? Either, I guess, you've sealed or you've seen someone seal or put in the machine.
I don't know. I'm just trying to think. The craziest stories I've heard is Henkelman getting phone calls from some sort of police authority or FBI. In fact, I think it was in Colombia. They got a phone call because they got a serial number. And this was pulled out of a cocaine lab. You know, and so they were vacuum sealing. They're using the Henkelman to vacuum seal their cocaine. And so I guess that was probably the craziest thing. Knowing that, you know, they got these vacuum sealers out in the jungle somewhere. They're like an expensive...
Yeah.
I will say this. There's a funny story. I was when I first started with Henkelman, I went there for training, and then we ended up going to Amsterdam because they wanted to meet one of their local dealers. And this dealers becomes quite funny. So we went in to downtown at sort of in the city of Amsterdam, and we're in the dealer. It's just a small local dealer, and you go into a small shop, and he had some Henkelmans out. And he's talking, and very friendly, and we're talking, and just sort of he's answering my questions, and we're having a good chat. And as we're talking, the three guys walk in, you know, sort of hooded, baseball caps on, and so he goes, wait 1 minute. And he goes over, he starts talking to him. And, you know, during the conversation, they just get a bunch of cash out, and they hand it to him. And then one of the vacuum sealers that's sitting on the stand, they just pick it up and walk it out. And I'm like, he comes back over, and he goes, I don't ask, but we all know what they're doing. I said, okay. So what I found out is and I don't know whether this is still the same thing, but in the Netherlands, it's illegal to grow, illegal to grow cannabis. And I'm not exactly sure what sense that means, but it's legal to sell it in coffee shops. So the people that grow it don't like to talk about it. Mm-hmm. They just do it. So these guys come in, hand over the cash, and they walk out with because they're making a lot of money.
Right. Oh, of course. Yeah. Of course. Huh. Interesting. All right. In the battle of European cuisine versus American cuisine, who takes home the culinary championship belt?
I think 9 times out of 10, it's going to be the Europeans. You know, I know. You know, is it Bocuse? And I think the U.S. have climbed in the ranks. I think U.S. cuisine has come a long way. But I think to catch up with the Europeans where they are, they've still got. And I think most chefs would agree with that.
Yeah, I know. I don't think you're wrong. Well, at least you pick Chicago, which has a very diverse food scene. So you can at least get some good stuff. What meal do you miss most from Europe?
Fish and chips. Good fish and chips. And you're going to think I'm crazy here, but black pudding in the morning.
Oh. You're one of those.
Yeah, but if you grow up with it, I managed to get Marmite, which a lot of people probably won't even understand what that is, but it's a spread that it's hard to explain.
Anyone in the U.S. do good fish and chips? You ever had good fish and chips? Like decent fish and chips where you're like, that's respectable.
Oh, there is a, in Chicago, I was there the other day, a few weeks ago. It's an Indian English pub.
Okay,
and it's right by University of Chicago, the graduate school, the booth. It's right there, and what's it called? Oh, I can't remember the name. They do very British dishes. You know, in England, Indian food is the most popular food.
Yep.
But on a gastropub's menu, it's always going to have fish and chips. Their fish was excellent.
Yeah, awesome. In the universe of vacuum packaging, If aliens asked you to explain your job, how would you do it? How would you tell them in one sentence?
I don't know how to tell people now. People say, what do you do? You know, what do you do? What do you do? If aliens invaded, that's a great, that's an out of the box question. I don't even know how to answer that question. I would say that I remove air from bags, something like that.
There you go.
Yeah.
It works.
Yeah, it works.
All right. In a vacuum sealed time capsule, what items would you include to represent your journey so far?
Oh, we're going deep. My journey so far. I would say pictures of the family. My bracelet. Not today, Satan. I always wear not today, Satan on my bracelet, which just reminds me of these stinky thinking that sometimes happens. What else would I stick in there? A time capsule of vacuum sealers. What to remind me of me? I'm a big rugby guy, so it'd have to be something to do with rugby, probably a rugby ball or something like that.
Okay.
You know?
All right. Can you describe a standout moment in your career, a transition that significantly impacted your approach to your work? I mean, going from rugby to manufacturing to, you know, ownership.
Well, it's interesting that I used to play a lot of rugby competitively, and also I used to play a lot of tennis competitively, all right? Mm. And I never really thought about that, you know, what that impact was for me until later on in life. You know, I have, you know, in my drinking days, I had a lot of regrets. And in my sober days, those are now, you turn those sort of wounds into wisdom, as I heard Oprah Winfrey say recently, which I quite like. But rugby and tennis, what that taught me was, and I think why I jump into things is I'm a person, I think, as I reflect on my life, I was never afraid to make a decision. I'm always, you know, and there's good and bad with that. But I tell you, the good with that is I learned a lot. I was always willing to say yes. And rugby taught me decision making, because I had to make in the position I played, I had to make a lot of decisions and a lot of quickly. And tennis is a very individual game. So that taught me a lot of mental toughness. And you're out there on your own. So sometimes you just got to figure it out.
Yep. Make a decision. Don't be a flat squirrel.
Exactly.
Right or wrong.
Just move forward.
If it's right, great. Pat yourself on the back. If it's wrong, move forward from it. But nobody wants to be hit by that car and be a
dead
squirrel.
No, I don't want to. Yeah. I mean, I think it's all about making a decision.
Yeah.
Right. And I think the worst thing you can do in life is not make a decision, because either way, you make a decision, a wrong decision. I mean, there is no wrong decision. I think it's just make a decision and you'll figure it out.
Love it. Where does everyone go listening, watching to find out more about Invacus, about these new lines coming out? Where can they go to find all this information?
So Invacus.com, Invacus.com is Invacus. You'll find all the products there. And then the Zayden Group, you can go to Zayden, Zayyden.com, or meetaging.com is another place to get this. More to follow on that, but it's exciting. Exciting and scary all at the same time.
I love it. So you heard it first. You got a sneak peek of some stuff coming up. Duncan, thanks again. Appreciate you coming on.
Thank
you. And until next time, we'll see you on the sunny side.
HospitalityChain.com, the world's first online hub designed for the hospitality, culinary, and catering industry. From leading food and beverage brands to professional food service equipment, HospitalityChain.com makes sourcing simple. Search, select, buy direct, and save all in one global marketplace.